Life Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host of the show and founder of Yes to Life, the integrative cancer care charity that helps people in the UK to learn about integrative medicine and to access its many benefits as a means to improve their quality of life and their outcomes if they have cancer. Mind-body medicine, as it's generally referred to, or psychoneuroimmunology to give it its technical name, is a rapidly growing field, particularly in integrative cancer care. And one fascinating aspect of that is what is now termed chronobiology, which focuses on our relationship with the rhythms or cycles of life, our bodies, nature, the seasons, and so on. The emerging evidence of how much these rhythms affect our well-being is really quite startling, and it amounts to information that everyone trying to regain their well-being after a diagnosis of cancer needs to know. Today I'm speaking to an expert in this field, Adriano dos Santos, in The Hague, Netherlands. Hi Adriano, very pleased to meet you.
Well, it's a pleasure being here, Robin. Lovely being in the show.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I always love meeting new people working in integrative oncology. So I'm also delighted to say that you're in the lineup, amazing lineup of speakers for our conference, Reclaiming Our True Nature in September, set to be an absolutely fantastic day. So you've been working for a long time, is it more than 20 years, am I right?
Yes, it's correct. Yeah, yeah. Time flies.
It does. Yeah. So that's like me. I've been in this for just over 20 years. So you've been working in sports science and integrated nutrition.
Yes. And in the last years, in sleep medicine.
Right. Okay. We're going to talk about that. So, yeah, I was going to say that recently the area that seems to capture a lot of your attention has been the emerging science around our biological clocks and the rhythms that dictate our biochemistry and our well-being. Now, this is a fascinating and powerful topic that's providing the scientific underpinning for many lifestyle choices that were once thought of as just common sense, but they've sort of become lost in the forward rush of modern lifestyles. So, yeah. This information is really important for everyone when it comes to supporting well-being. However, it's kind of easy to see that the demands of something like a diagnosis of cancer could be yet another reason to pay even less attention to our biological clock. What would you say about circadian rhythms, as they're called, to someone with cancer?
Yeah. I think we first have to understand what circadian rhythm is for most of our audience, because I think we kind of lost that connection to our own natural body rhythms and what actually really means. And I always like using this analogy, you know, thinking about our body being this, having this orchestra playing all
okay.
the time.
Yeah.
So every cell of our body has this internal clock. And think of your liver cells, your immune cells, some of the blood cells as well, your gut bacteria. They all follow this kind of roughly 24 hours rhythm. And it's miraculously, you know, precise, this clock. And there's this master conductor in the brain. We know them by suprachiasmatic nucleus, but it's just a boring name, SCN
right.
for short.
Okay.
and it keeps up, you know, everything in time. That's the conductor playing. But now imagine when happens, the conductor loses its beat. Let's say he just drank too much alcohol the night before and
okay.
not playing
yeah,
really
yeah.
well. So the violins are playing in the morning while the cellos are playing in the evening. So the music is not turning up really well. And so that's what happens when we disrupt our internal circadian rhythm, our body rhythms, our body clocks. And we can do this through several ways, you know, night shifts, scrolling our phones at midnight with those contents that engage our brain and gets our brain activated. Eating late dinners or drinking too much alcohol in the evening and flying across time zones every few weeks, you know, all of that. And there's a, comes to mind now, a paper actually, I think in 2021 that came out, this paper from Fishbang and colleagues. And they published this at the Journal of Clinical Investigation, if my memory serves me right. And they showed that circadian disruption is directly linked to high levels of inflammation, weakened immune surveillance. So think of our soldiers being kind of not well fed and not ready for fight. And then impaired DNA repair system, which is vital, obviously, especially when we're talking about cancer and cancer prevention as well. And then increased also risk of metabolic diseases and neurodegenerative disease as well. So this paper is really illustrates very much what I just mentioned about the conductor being out of tune. And but the good part of, let's say the hopeful part of it, is that we can retrain our conductor and the musicians playing and align them by doing a couple of things that we, you know, simple things that we probably forgot to, you know, the our normal natural relationship with light, the meal timing, and we can get into specifics later on. But yes, we can get our orchestra back into harmony, let's say.
Right. Okay. And so if we have a chronic disease, getting ourselves out of that corner, this is a pretty important building block.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. As it's a two-way street, isn't it? You know, when you have those clocks working perfectly well, and then we have those inflammatory processes under control, and obviously we have all the genetic components as well that we need to understand. Each of us have, chronotype, all of those that we need to probably have this discussion today. Yeah.
Mm, yeah. And it's worth noting for anybody who hasn't twigged yet that cancer, along with pretty much all chronic diseases, are inflammatory conditions.
Mm.
Inflammation is at the heart of them. It's one of the hallmarks of cancer. And everybody agrees this is a big part of the problem.
Yes.
It's not the cause. It's what happens once it's going. But once it's going, it's a problem.
Yeah. There's a particular paper that it came out actually in 2022 from Berisha and et al. They're from University of Hamburg. And they published this paper called Sleep Disruption in Cancer. And they put this phrase and this question mark at the end, which is chicken or the egg.
All right.
So, and basically they were showing exactly this, the chronic inflammation processes being the most, the strongest driver for cancer growth in the body. But then they also showed that cancer itself and its treatments further destroy sleep architecture and clock genes, our body clocks, so they demonstrate how much we have to actually pay attention, how much we can break this cycle by doing a couple of things, and that's something we're going to discuss.
That's a very strong point, isn't it? Because you're right, is that this is a kind of double-edged sword, if you like, of conventional cancer treatments, is that, yes, they obviously have an effect on the cancer, but they all come with a bundle of side effects, unintended consequences.
Mm.
And some of those, well, I mean, a side effect of radiotherapy, for example, is cancer. So, there's always something there in the wings that you've got to look out for. So, yeah, you've got the inflammatory process of cancer, as you said, but then you've got the inflammatory processes of, say, chemotherapy as well.
Yeah.
So you've got two sources of inflammation to look at. And so you've got to be on your guard, basically. You've got to do a lot in order to keep this inflammation under control.
And exactly, Robin, another thing, I talk with colleagues as well a lot about this, and because it's something that really drives me to talk more and more about this, because obviously we are not doing enough, because sleep must be part of this cancer care system that we have, not just kind of this afterthought, that we have, right. We should talk about sleep, maybe some sleep hygiene stuff. No, there's so much more than we can actually. I even call one of my, weapons in my arsenal here, that I have is light diet, I call light diet protocol, because,
right.
you know, there's so many tools that we can use to help our patients to align their clocks. And so when I work with patients, the first thing I do is addressing their biological clocks and making sure they're sleeping on the right time, they are waking up in the right time for them or for their treatment as well, aligning with their treatments as well, managing their light exposure, managing the diet, manage the meal timing, which we know is very important, managing the fasting as well. And so there's so many things around sleep, but sleep is the center, a point, I believe, that we should really pay attention more. And it's not that kind of luxury thing that we're going to pay attention on that later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's very interesting. And yeah, I wanted to go on to talk more about sleep. It's obviously you've kind of majored on. It's notable that hospitals, one of the things they do for you is they give you the worst possible nutrition. But they also deprive you of your sleep. They have this, if you watch a Carry On film, I don't know if you know what a Carry On film is. Yes, you do.
Yes,
you've lived
I know.
In England, yeah. Well, in that, they get a really noisy aluminium trolley with a wheel that goes blah, 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 and they drive it down the middle of the wood in the middle of the night. Well, that is a joke in that film, but actually, it's for real. They do stuff just like that. I mean, they may have got better recently, but they certainly used to. It was only funny because it was so realistic. There is this complete disrespect for people's need for sleep when they're sick.
I know.
Shocking.
And not to mention about the light.
Yeah, you know, that's right. Lights as well.
In the evening, if you think about it, I had actually recently a good friend who was hospitalized, and I went to Westminster Hospital, and I was shocked. I was like there at 9:30 in the evening. I was shocked at how much light these patients were getting.
Fluorescent light usually, yeah?
Yeah, fluorescent light. Yeah. I mean, I even measured in his ward, it was about 450 lux, just which is really high for a night period time. So it's, anyway,
It's quite a thing. Anyway, so sleep. Let's talk some more about sleep. So this is something you've homed in on, obviously, and you're talking about it there as actually you feel it should be almost part of a prescription for people with cancer. Yes, it's part of your therapy, is that the sleep is addressed properly. So talk a bit more about the biorhythms. That's kind of our most fundamental biorhythm that everybody understands we've got. Tell me about it and the things that are bad for it, the things that are good for it, how much you need, when you need it, all that kind of thing.
Let's start with the basics then. I think we should address here that we have a few chronotypes that we all have, and I think that is genetics. And
For different people.
Exactly. So understand your genetics. And we have validated questionnaires out there that I can actually share with you later on, and so we can place that on the show notes for our listeners, so they can do their tests to see what kind of chronotypes they are.
Right.
So we have the very early bird people, which are like those people waking up around 5-ish.
That's me.
Yes. And they're very early birds. And they are, and so for each of those chronotypes, we have a specific, let's say, approach, right? And then we have the early birds, that's me. People were waking up around 6:30, 7, and if they're like spot on those times. And then we have the between, which are not too early, they're around 8, 9. And then we have the late owls, the people waking up. They would wake up at 11 o'clock if they're on holiday for 2 weeks already, and they'd be fine waking up at 11 or 12. But in society, we actually forced all the chronotypes to respect the societal rules, like going to school at the same time, everyone,
right.
Going to work at the same time. And so we kind of learned how to kind of conform according to situations and misalign our clocks. So that's the first point I want to say. We can adapt ourselves. Being an early bird, I can try to shift a little bit my clock to be a little bit later and going to bed later and wake up a little later can do that without causing any effect. But the problem is we normally shift too much out of, we get completely away from our basis. And that is something that we need to kind of learn and go back to our foundational.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Understanding the chronotypes, the first thing, I think that's very vital for all of us. And then another thing that I would say is, keeping consistency. Every time waking up at the same time and sleeping at the same time, even if you're on holiday or weekends, make sure you actually choose a time that's close to your chronotype, and then set those times as, those are the times I'm going to go to bed, and that is the time I'm going to wake up, because that really set the clocks as well and adjust the clocks. And that actually helps reduce inflammation just by doing that simple change. And the other thing I would say, really getting deep into the light exposure and how much light you're getting throughout the day, but also in the morning, what kind of light exposure you're getting. Let's dive in maybe in the light exposure now in the morning. So in the morning, as we wake up, we have to, obviously, let's say the very early bird like you, if you wake up at 5 and you don't want to shift your clock, you want to get as much light as possible right at 5 o'clock or 5:30 in the morning. And that means if it's depending on the time of the year, it's going to be dark, then you probably need a light bulb, some light box somewhere that you can actually get an artificial light and a strong light, which will be approximately more than 10,000 lux. So there are lots of set lamps out there that people can use for that, to set your clock. Basically, the first hour, it's very important for you to reset your clock. Remember I said 24 hours clock that we have? So to kind of start your clock, you need that strong light exposure.
Just for anybody who doesn't know, a SAD light is a...
SAD light is seasonal affective disorder, and in short, is known for SAD, S-A-D. So that is a specific light they can buy, and it's validated lights that are being controlled by laboratories, and they have this well-balanced light spectrum, okay? And so the amount of light that you're getting in that light bulbs or box are around 10,000 lux, which is very, is the minimum you should be getting in the morning. And then getting the right light in the morning, setting the clock and getting outside if you can, if it's already light. If you're, for example, in my case, waking up at 6, now this time of the year, it's light outside. So getting outside is the most important thing, because outdoor light, sunlight, you get in a cloudy day, you're already getting more than 10,000 lux in the morning. So on a sunny day, you're probably getting even around 50,000. So just give an idea, in artificial light and normal ceiling light, you'll be getting around 400, 500, if you're lucky, in a light, indoor light. So that's why having a specific light box at home can be very helpful, especially if you're early bird or winter season. So those are the things. And then in the evening, and that's something that we lost totally the connection with, is even in, we are living in places like in big cities, everywhere you go outside is totally lit, and the amount of light is extraordinary, and you're getting completely the wrong signals to your brain. And so basically you want to dim your lights down as much as you can in the evening after dinner, and making sure you get, you know, as much red light as possible rather than blue light. So making sure you also use more table lamps instead of ceiling lights, because we know our brains are so clever. You know, we associate things, and the sun, it comes from above.
Above, our, right.
Yes.
Okay.
So every light that comes from above your head, and that's already so many, there's so many papers around this, actually, that direction of light coming in contact with our eyes, the retina, and sending signal to the RCN, and the brains recognize that coming from above has a major impact comparing to lights coming from below.
So how about that? Yeah, know that.
So from table lamps, you can definitely simply just switch off your ceiling lights and put in table lamps around your house. Mm, you know, that's a very easy thing to do, not complicated. And rather than having to change the whole light system around your house. So those things are very important. So getting your light right, and the exposure of light. So getting as much blue light in the morning and in the afternoon and in the evening, kind of dropping the amount of blue light exposure. And obviously, then coming to nutrition, getting your nutrition as well, most of your calories, let's say, most of a nutrient-dense food during the daytime. So making sure you get most of your nutrients in light hours, and then shifting your nutrition to kind of a more sort of a small little snacks, let's say, or supper, let's say small supper, in evening, and making sure you're not having a heavy meal in the evening, and having that 3 to 4 hours before you go to bed, having that meal, so you have the time to digest. And those are basic thing to do. But then we can go more into specifics in terms of what kind of food you should be eating and all of that. But I think for now, it's important to, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot, isn't it? This, yeah, subtle stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now, one of the things I've spoken to people about, which is obviously another rising science in the whole field of chronotherapy, as it's called, or timing related to treatment, is that treatments delivered at different times have different effects. And I wondered if you want to talk about that a little bit, because it's a very interesting field. And some of the statistics I've been given about the change in effectiveness are startling.
Yes, yes, yes. There are so many things going on. I'm very excited about this topic, because not only chrononutrition, but there's this paper, a remarkable paper actually, done by Professor Relogio. She's called Angela Relogio, her name. They published this also last year, if I'm not mistaken. And basically they measured the patient's clock genes to understanding the clock gene expressions of the patients at that present moment, to understand how, you know, how misaligned those patients were. And so let's respect then their clocks at the moment and shift their treatments accordingly.
Okay. So it's not, you're saying we're not going to base it on an idea of what the best time is. We're going to measure the best time for this person.
Yes. We're not going to even consider what we think these patients' chronotypes are. We can actually measure how their clocks are operating right now before their treatment. So they did this DNA test, which is very simple. It's a saliva test. And they actually have this test already available for some hospitals across Europe, in the UK. So they did this trial called MAMOC trial. And they did even the phase 3 last year. And they showed that the cancer drug ruparparib, which is this analog of, let's say, the PARP inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually saw that actually this drug, we know that disrupts the body clock genes. And they saw a very interesting result by analyzing and changing the time of the chemotherapy. The patients got a 72% more response to the treatment than actually the people who were in control getting the standardized, you know, time.
I mean, 72% is the kind of figure people only dream of, isn't it, in cancer that treatment? I mean, you know.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I think this is the future of personalized chronotherapy, I believe. And they developed this test called Time Teller, which I just mentioned. And then they also showed as well, for example, another clinical trial in glioblastoma research, that the time of the day of the treatment is so much a part of their, should be part of our approach of the protocol based on the clock gene expression. So can you imagine you're going to your oncologist and then getting this test done and identifying what the best time of the day they should be administering the chemo or the radiotherapy or even other therapies, and that also extrapolates to your supplementation, your nutrition, and everything else. Yeah.
Right, right. How interesting. Well, now that chemotherapy is much less hospital-based than it used to be, it's tending to be more, you know, you can have it different places, you can have it at home, whatever. Maybe some flexibility in the schedule could get in there.
Yes.
I mean, it's one of those things that's like the hospital systems are so sort of rigid that you can't, I can't imagine them testing you for the best time of day and delivering it then in a hospital. I really can't. But outside of that environment, well, maybe it could happen. And maybe the patients could even be the ones to prompt the test happening. Is the test expensive?
For now, the test is around 300 euros on top of a head. But, you know, this is not being roll out in all the hospitals across the world.
I'm sure
it's still very, you know,
it'll get
expensive.
Cheaper.
But, you know, once you actually start implementing it in a standardized treatment, then things will be so much cheaper because it's only saliva testing. It's very simple.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can get somebody to do it at home themselves, can't you?
Oh, yeah, you could.
On a test like that, you just send them to them. There are lots of tests you could just buy and they're sent to you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. How interesting. Well, I mean, you know, if you want your treatment to work, this is tough to know, isn't it, really?
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You were just talking about nutrition in the same sort of vein, and I even saw you used the word chrononutrition, which is a new one on me. But of course, I've heard lots of people talk about when you eat stuff. Lots of nutritionists have talked about that kind of thing. I've never heard it called chrononutrition before, but I sense that it's something that's getting more sophisticated as time goes on. Do you want to say a little bit more about how nutrition affects us at different times of day?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, let's start with the basics is that, you know, our body operates differently across the day and evening and night, obviously. For example, the first chunk of the day, we know our glucose sensitivity is much higher, so we actually manage glucose much better. We are more efficient in managing glucose. And for instance, our gut motility is also within 2 hours after waking up. It's really, you know, effective. Our guts are moving. And so that's really, you know, we have these, you know, physiological functions working across the entire day, the 24-hour clock, as we just mentioned. And that applies to nutrition as well. Certain nutrients are more, absorbed in the morning in comparison to the evening, giving a very good example. For an early bird person, I'll never actually give vitamin D right in the morning, because that person is not going to be able to absorb enough vitamin D. And also the vitamin D will not be absorbed properly, and therefore all the properties that we actually expecting, anti-inflammatory processes and also the bone density that we actually want to work on, for example. And so then I'll actually use at the end of the day for that early bird person, or maybe beginning of the evening, because we know there are some nutrients, for example, vitamin B's, for example, are well absorbed and also a producer by certain microbiomes as well in the gut in the morning. So we have this clock operating, you know, the whole time and controlling certain functions, such as hormone, for example. But on the nutrition side of things, for example, fiber, we know that fiber, it's extremely important to be consumed in the first half of the day as much as we can, because fiber is the, let's say, the building block for certain compounds that our gut microbiome are actually converting to. For example, let's think about the GABA production that we need in the evening. For our GABA is a neurotransmitter in the brain, but it's produced in the gut by certain gut microbiomes. But these gut microbiomes, they only can produce GABA if you get enough fiber.
Okay.
And GABA is an extremely important neurotransmitter in the brain, because it actually calms down all the neurons' activities in the brain, so allowing us to sleep. So GABA is one important compound. But we only get enough if our gut microbiome, obviously, the gut microbiome diversity is in order. So you get good diversity there. And you've got the right bugs there to produce. But also you're providing the nutrients, the fibers that they need for converting into GABA. So, and we know that fiber in the morning gives this buffer for you to produce enough GABA in the evening. So, but people who actually, let's say, starve their gut microbiome in the morning from fiber or in the afternoon and only eat maybe, let's give an example of a very typical person who is fasting until 12 o'clock in the middle of the day, and then have maybe a small lunch because they are working, they don't have the time. And then they go back home after work and they have their main meal, which is the evening meal. And that main evening is full of fiber. And that fiber your microbiome will not have time enough to actually process it all and create this buffer that they need to produce this compound, GABA. So therefore, your sleep architecture, your sleep phases will not be as let's say, effective or well-structured as it would be if you had fibers right in the morning. Obviously, morning for me is different from morning for someone who is a late owl, you know, somebody right. who wakes up at 11.
Yeah.
But let's say the first meal of your day. So that is all where chrononutrition comes, in place to help to understand based on your chronotype, your lifestyle, your nutrition needs, understand the timing when you're eating certain compounds, certain nutrients, and even the amount of proteins, you know, when you were actually synthesizing more collagen, for example. We know that collagen gets repaired mainly in the evening. So having enough buffers of building blocks of collagen before you go to bed, like having a good protein meal in the evening can be really restorative for your collagen, deposits. And so, that's what is in a nutshell what chrononutrition is.
Very interesting stuff. Maybe a quick word more about the microbiome now, something I know you're pretty interested in as well, and the interplay between chronology and the microbiome. Could you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Robin, let's keep it that simple. You know, we have this army inside us, we have this, we're made up of, trillions and trillions, to be more precise, 38 trillion bacteria living inside our gut. And that amazes me every day when I think about this number. And they've never seen the sun, the light, right?
No.
I think that's their universe. And together they weigh actually about as much as our brain, to be honest. We have some data depend on obviously the individual, but this isn't just a kind of a passive collection of microbes, just kind of a hitching
a lift.
So it's an active, really intelligent ecosystem, and that trains our immune system, and that's where comes the link, and produce also these essential molecules and breakdowns our food, convert even the food they're breaking now, and for us to assimilate. And there's this also landmark published by Harvard in Nature and in Microbiology. And it made really clear, remember this, when it published, I think, 3 years ago, the direct role in fighting cancer, actually, that the microbiome has. And Professor Wendy Garrett's team, you may know them as well, because they publish a lot on gut microbiome and cancer. And they mapped how dietary patterns, physically change which bacteria thrives in your gut, but how those bacteria then shape the tumor environment. And that was fascinating, because when you eat processed food, for example, high sugar, low fiber, and you're feeding obviously certain bacteria, and we know they are not I don't want to say bad. The most helpful ones.
Right.
And there's one particular bacteria called Physiobacteria nucleatum. And these ones, actually, this species, has been found embedded inside colorectal cancer tumors. And these bacteria, they've already shown, demonstrated, and that's not even association was causative publication where they proved they're actively promoting cancer growth, the colorectal tumors. And so when you're eating more fiber-rich whole foods, vegetables and legumes and, things, nuts and whole grains and et cetera, we also nourishing the other sort of bacteria that are producing other good compounds that counter, balance those let's say, those guys who are promoting tumors. And compounds like, short chain fatty acids, for example, that are very, very important for our health, because particularly a compound, short chain fatty acids is divided in three different compounds, and there's one acetate, propionate, and butyrate. But in particular, butyrate for cancer is quite relevant because this compound has a very potent anti-inflammatory property. And also, they strengthen the gut barrier, the epithelial wall, you know, the protection that we have in the gut. And that's, leaky gut is the opposite of it, is the poor gut barrier. And so that, only those two, the reducing inflammation and increasing strengthening the gut barrier, it helps in strengthening the immune cells, because you're protecting your body against bacteria that goes through the blood bloodstream. So that is something I would say, that's the first paper I would recommend for some of the clinicians and practitioners, also even patients, to read, because it's quite interesting to see how strong the connection is. And yeah, so I think it's very, very, there's so much to discuss on the gut microbiome science here.
We're kind of at the beginning of it, aren't we?
Oh, yes.
I think there's going to be a lot more.
Yes.
Yeah, that paper you just described is powerful, but it's like the beginning.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, look, we've only got a few minutes left. I want to end on a practical note. Knowledge is one thing, very important one. But what a lot of people with cancer are ultimately looking for are things to do, actions. What can I do to help myself? So, and also many people need to know, what can I do to help myself easily and cheaply? So
yes.
Do you want to give a roundup of some accessible lifestyle changes that will have a supportive effect on people's well-being?
Yes. I would say let's start with the basics, and let's really understand your chronotype first. Understand where... Ask yourself this question. If I were on a holiday for 2 weeks in an island on my own with maybe one book, that's all, and you are on an island, you have no light, artificial light, what time would you go to bed? What time would you wake up after 2 weeks being in this island? So that's the first question I would say, ask yourself. And then obviously we can put this on the show notes if it's possible. The chronotype questionnaire, Munich, it's called Munich questionnaire. And really understand your chronotype, because that's the starting point for your nutrition, for your exercise, for your light exposure, and for your sleep and wake cycles as well, to understand what time you should be going to bed and etc. And the second thing I would say, let's get consistency on your sleep and wake times. Set based on your chronotype, based on your obviously your duties, your work, obviously trying to be as close as possible to your chronotype. And that's something I would say. And then on the nutrition side of things, really packing your first meal with fiber, proteins, and obviously some carbohydrates, whatever, depending on what kind of cancer or treatment you're going through. I would say being very specific with carbohydrates, sugar and stuff, but just being very general now on the recommendation. But the first thing that I would say for everyone is fiber, making sure you're getting, feeding your gut microbiome to get a gut diversity, microbiome diversity. And that is through lots of fiber and phytonutrients. So a lot of color in your plate. So colorful vegetables, colorful fruits and berries. We've got lots of diversity in the nature, respecting obviously the seasons. And so really getting the meals, really packed with fiber, especially in the first ones. And then living our lives, that's the third. And that's something I myself struggle, and I think we all doing, our best here, is trying to live our lives on According to the season, the light. So, when it gets to 7:30, 8 p.m., don't ask me complicated questions anymore. Trying to kind of calm down and switch off, dim down the light. No emails anymore. No, really respecting that our natural biological times. And for early bird, obviously, you're worse than, you understand that very well. Really trying to respect that. And I think that would be the first, an easy things that everyone could do. And as I mentioned about the light, I think light, pay attention, light exposure, making sure you've got a lot of light exposure in the morning, whether it's natural light, which is always the preference, getting outside as much as you can, even if it's a cloud day or rainy day. We know that in England it rains all the time, but it doesn't matter. You're still getting a lot of light through the clouds, so getting outside. And then if that's not possible, then getting one of those SAD lamps, the SAD lamps, to have that in somewhere in your house where you spend most of the time in the morning, and having that for at least 30 minutes to have that 10,000 lux at least exposure.
Okay, and one source which would help you link up, you found out your chronotype and you realize what your rhythms are supposed to be, to link up your behaviors with that, where would you look?
It's a validated questionnaire. It's from the University of Munich in Germany, and it's worldwide applied in every single research, and everyone can access it. It's very easy website.
What you're saying is that when you do the test, the questionnaire, it tells you then what you should be doing.
Oh, yes.
Right. Good.
Yeah, it tells you exactly what, for example, what time you should be aiming to go to bed, what time you should be aiming to sleep or wake up and then exercise and
excellent.
So I think that is very fundamental.
Great. All right, really good. Okay, thank you very much for the discussion today, Adriana. Fascinating stuff, and the immediacy and accessibility of all this different kinds of chronotherapy, it makes it a very important topic for everyone with cancer. I think it's something they can do. So I look very much forward to your presentation at our conference in September. Some good stuff is going to be in there. So look forward to that.
Thank you, Robin. It's been a pleasure. And thanks for the listeners as well. I'm looking forward to being in the conference then, sharing more details on this topic. I'm really, really excited about that.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome. Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, as you heard in that discussion, Adriano is just one of the stunning lineup of more than 20 expert speakers in our two 2026 conferences, online very soon on the 16th of May and in person on the 26th of September in London. Check the full programme for both events and book your place at conference.yestolife.org.uk. Thanks very much for listening. Many of you tell me how helpful it is to hear from the thoughtful experts who are my guests, and I'm delighted to say I'll be back with another next week for the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. So I hope you'll listen again. Goodbye.